Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 51. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation. A tough one, no victory Monday here. And really, this game may have set back football 100 years as the Cleveland Browns beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 13-10 on a game-winning short field goal by Browns kicker Dustin Hopkins with 2 seconds remaining. Pittsburgh dropping to 6-4 on the season. Third place in the AFC North, Cleveland 7-3, second place in the AFC North. Dave, I think these two teams put the offensive in offensive in this one. This is a tough game for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, and we still have to watch it 10 more times.
Yay.
Got the All-22. Looks like it's filling in. We should have that probably in the next hour or so and all. But the TV tape going back through it again last night seemed to take forever to get through that, especially when you get into the second half there. But, yeah, we have a lot to talk about today and not a lot of positive, obviously, involved with it. There were some positives, you know, come out of that game. Jaylen Warren played very well. That's one of the bright spots there. Some of the run blocking, I think, will look good on all 22. The defense, look, you only allow 13 points in a game. You should win some of these ball games. And, you know, we talked about the Steelers bucking the TOX stat, T-O-X, turnovers and explosive plays. They won the TOX stat 3-0 in this game against the Browns, yet obviously lost the game overall there. And that's hard to do. And it's also hard to have as few passing explosive plays as this team has had in what, the last four games? It's like 3 in the last 4 games, right? Something like that. That's hard to do, you know, overall. Somewhere in there, you know, the team's going to miss a tackle or two on a short pass, and you got to get an explosive play that way. But anyway, I'm kind of burying the lead here, and the fact is that this team lost what I think most would consider a very winnable game from the mere standpoint that the Browns, you know, were starting a rookie quarterback in this game in Dorian Thompson-Robinson. And yet the Steelers, you know, they did what they were supposed to do on defense, especially when it came to the scoreboard, but obviously didn't win the game.
I guess Pittsburgh should just lose a talk stat because that's when they seem to win games overall. But that's a minor footnote, I suppose, on the overall just stinker of a game that Pittsburgh had. So we're going to recap this thing, talk Kenny Pickett, talk this offense, talk about comments after the game. But quickly, before we do that, want to recap some of the roster moves and things that of note that occurred prior to kickoff on Sunday. Pittsburgh making a flurry of roster moves on Saturday. They activated tight end Pat Freiermuth off of injured reserve and to the 53-man roster. He played, you probably wouldn't have known it, but he did play in this game, caught one pass. So he's officially back, his first game after getting hurt initially in week 4, then re-injured and being placed on IR, headed to IR. And on IR right now is safety Keanu Neal with the rib injury he suffered against the Packers. And then other roster moves included Michael Walker getting signed to the 53-man roster, Tariq Carpenter, Trenton Thompson getting elevated from the practice squad, Thompson playing a fair amount of snaps on defense. So that's the lay of the land there. From an active standpoint, Dave, just kind of run through those. Anything notable? I don't think there's really anything that surprised or was in the question when it comes from an active standpoint.
No, and only needed 6 for this game due to the roster construction and numbers on that. And, you know, and I know a lot of people are disappointed that Darius Rush was not active for this game, but the writing, you know, due to the way the numbers fell out and the elevations and all like that, you know, it wasn't surprising at all. And really, that was the only one that might have had some sort of will it or won't it happen when it comes to him. But obviously he had a couple of injured players ruled out for this one on the inactive list, and Montrevious Adams and Minka Fitzpatrick. It'll be interesting to see if they can get Minka, you know, look, at this point, Montrevious is probably no longer a starter, but he can obviously rotate in there and give you some snaps. The big one to watch this coming week will be Minka Fitzpatrick, to see if they can get him back for this game against the Cincinnati Bengals.
And the safety line's getting really thin, excuse me. No Minka Fitzpatrick, no Keanu Neal in this game. And Neal, of course, going to miss at least the next three. And then it was Elijah Riley with a high ankle injury in this game, and he left about midway through. So it left the team with what it's safe, Devontae Casey, Trenton Thompson, and Miles Killebrew. So Riley, the one known injury from this game. Cam Hayward, I think, was just tired a couple times. Kenny Pickett got dirt in his eye. He did not actually end up missing a snap after that because of a Browns challenge. So Riley's a name to watch. And then, of course, the guys that did not play. On Minka, I don't even know, Dave, if he'll come back this week. I mean, hamstrings are tricky. The guy has not practiced once since getting hurt in week 8. It's possible. I hope for it, but I really just am in wait-and-see mode right now.
Yeah, and didn't they bring in another Eric Rowe in for a workout on, what was it, Friday? So it'll be interesting to see if something's there. Another news tidbit. Miles Jack, who we talked about at the end of the podcast the other day, entertaining some of the tinfoil thoughts, you know, with him being released from the Eagles reserve retired list the other day. It sounds that there was indeed some smoke related to a little bit of fire there. And it sounds like, whether it be practice squad or 53-man roster, he's probably going to be back on this team probably by the end of this day. Heck, maybe by the time we get done with this podcast, but probably by Tuesday afternoon at the latest. And then it'll be interesting to see what happens with Eric Rowe as well, too. Someone that we've linked to the Steelers, obviously, in the past.
Yeah, he's played some corner, played some safety. I imagine at this stage in his career and for Pittsburgh's knees, it's more of a safety type position. And yeah, you know, kudos to the chalk went up to the tinfoil hat wearers, Dave. They called it. I wasn't entirely sure what that meant about Miles Jack. We talked about it at the end of our show on Friday, I guess it was. But I think later that evening, that report came out that there was interest there. I would have to imagine he would not start on the 53. You would go practice squad, see where he's at, get him conditioned. I'm assuming he'll need some of that. And then you can play the elevation game as opposed to having to occupy a spot on the 53-man roster. But we'll talk about that more probably throughout this podcast. But it says a lot about Mark Robinson, who did not play a single defensive snap against the Browns on Sunday. It was really Landon Roberts and Walker that dominated the snaps there. So whenever you have a guy off the practice squad that you just signed 3 weeks ago in Walker and the now unretired Miles Jack playing over you, at least we assume at some point Jack will probably play over Mark Robinson, that says a lot about one Mark Robinson.
Yeah, there's when you're looking ahead at this point, when it comes to Mark Robinson specifically, they don't trust him. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the storyline there. And you know, you're talking about a guy that's a you know, converted running back, and you know, you rewind all the way back to some of the things that Terrell Austin said right before the season started about, you know, maybe we'll look to him at 2024. You've gotten this far down into your depth chart at this point, and you know, you can't find a way to get him on the field at this point in this game against the Browns. That, in my opinion, really speaks volumes. Is he just not grasping the concepts overall, the playbook, the communication standpoint, all of it? It's probably a combination of a lot of things there. So, yeah, hopefully not a lot of people are Mark Robinson jersey owners at this point, or didn't go out and buy a large selection of his rookie cards or something like that. To come out of this game and him not get any defensive snaps, I think is a storyline.
Oh yeah, it's notable for sure, especially versus a run heavy, run centric Cleveland Browns team. Not exactly playing the Kansas City Chiefs or I don't know, some real pass happy front over there. So Those are kind of the storylines within the storylines. Of course, top line here, Pittsburgh losing this game 13-10. The offense doing almost nothing. Sans Jaylen Warren against a granted great, really good Browns defense, but still just maybe rock bottom for this passing game overall that seems to be sinking down more and more. Kenny Pickett officially finishing the game 15 of 28. 106 yards, three sacks he took on the day, no touchdowns, no interceptions. So, yeah, I mean, it's just where to begin with this one, Dave. It begins with Kenny Pickett, begins with his passing game. What are your initial thoughts and impressions?
Let's go back to what we asked the listeners to play the home game version of the Terrible Podcast on third down in this game. Third down overall in this game, 3 of 14, 21.4%. Now, look, this is obviously a very good Browns defense, right? And you would probably expect them to not be, you know, in the 40% category when it comes to this. But we talked specifically about Pickett and passing on third down and how his completion percentage going into this game was, what was it, 46 or 40, whatever.
It was 48%, I think, total, 46% on third and five and closer.
Right. And his completion percentage on third down in this game was a little bit better than that. But as far as the conversions went, you know, they weren't converting. So, you know, obviously there was a lot wrong in some first and second down situations with Kenny Pickett. But there were opportunities in this game where the offense was facing less than third and five or more, and they were still having problems convert theirs. So it really gets magnified in a game like this where you already knew that you were probably going to have problems moving the football, and you knew how key third downs were likely going to be in this game, and how the Kenny Pickett completion percentage on third downs across the board stuck out like a sore thumb going into this game. And yeah, the completion percentage was a little bit better by him in this game, but the fact of the matter is, if you're not moving the chains, you're not moving the chains. And when you throw on top of it that this team did not have a passing explosive play in this game, only two explosive plays total, both on the ground, both by Jaylen Warren. Luckily, one of those was a, you know, more than a triple explosive play for a touchdown in there. That magnifies all this together. So not just, you know, Pickett was off in general in this game, but when you boil this thing down to third down specifically, the Steelers really, really suffered, you know, offensively in this game.
It is one of the worst third down outputs you're going to see from this team. They were in many and long situations. Of their 14 third down attempts, 9 were of 8-plus yards. They went 1 of 9 in those situations, but 5 of them were 3rd and 5 and closer, and they were 2 of 5 in those moments. So 40% 3rd and 5 and closer is not good enough overall. I don't even know where to really begin with this. Well, my overall takeaway for this offense is, Dave, from this game, just how disjointed it looked, and not just even in the actual output, which is miserable, of 10 points, of no passing game, of Jaylen Warren being the only bright spot on the day, but just it really felt like this team had never played together before. Like, it was a bunch of just Josh Dobbs getting together. No one knew each other's name. And I think crowd noise had an impact on that. You know, Tomlin, others talked about the hostile environment, really the first real kind of like hostile crowd they'd gone into this year, because they played with at the Raiders, at the Rams, and those are almost home games for the Steelers. And it really showed. There was so much miscommunication across the board. I'm going to go into all 22 and kind of really focus on that. There was just so many errors between quarterback, receiver, not on the same page, you know, center snapping the ball before the quarterback's expecting it, just communication breakdowns and play calls and what I think, you know, half the team thinks one thing's being run and half the team thinks something else is being run. It just felt like this team could not get on the same page offensively and defensively. They had some issues as well with taking 2 timeouts because they had 12 guys on the field in this game. So to me, that's the theme overall, which is just a complete lack of communication, just complete breakdown and struggling with the crowd noise in Cleveland.
Yeah, the only thing they did good in this game was run the football, and specifically with Jaylen Warren. But you've got to have third down conversions. You've got to have some passing explosive plays. You've got to have key moments of the game making plays. And they obviously didn't get it. Look, you know, the Steelers finally had their full complement of offensive players in this game for the first time since week one, because you get Pat Freiermuth back, and obviously Deontay's been back several weeks. You've got your rookie tackle out there at right tackle playing well, especially in the running game there. All the things that you would think would be positives that would lead you to at least have a better output than what you had on Sunday. I mean, you know, Kenny Pickett posted an adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat of 2.48. And that stat relies obviously on passing yards, on touchdown passes, on interceptions, sacks, and sack yardage there. And he didn't even throw, you know, normally if you see a adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat number, you know, that low, there's an interception in there or two. I mean, he didn't even throw an interception. I mean, that about the only thing they did right in the passing game overall was not throw an interception. And it's hard to do when you have an average completed air yard distance of 2-point-something yards.
Right. You almost hope that he would, just because it would signify maybe he's pushing the ball downfield for
right. Right. And, you know, even his intended air yard distance obviously wasn't all that great, but his completed air yard distance, heck, you had what? Five? What did I write? What did I type up last night? Five of the completions that he had were behind the line of scrimmage. And yeah, you look at the passing chart again, the middle of the field, yada, yada. But I mean, this team, and, you know, Kenny Pickett talked after the game, you know, we expect that they expected the Browns defense to come out there and play a lot of man, and with good reason, mm-hmm. but look, what did we also say? Jim Schwartz don't give a tendencies is probably not going to be anything that's attached to Jim Schwartz, and kudos to him, because they came out and played a lot of zone concepts. And at some point during that game, by halftime specifically, you probably need to recognize that. I'm sure the Steelers did, and whatever changes they attempted to make within that, it still felt like they were waiting for the few times that they'd get the man and try to attack that. And obviously they weren't able to do that a few times, and, you know, had the miscommunication. It was just a mess overall with this thing. So no, this is not completely on Kenny Pickett. You know, Matt Canada once again shares blame in this, but when it comes down to it, I mean, you just look at some of the accuracy things and the miscommunication things overall, a lot of that's got to go on the quarterback.
Sure, it does. And it's not just about the Browns game. This is not a one-off. This is a continued pattern of really a month, or, you know, if you include the first half of that Jaguars game, of just really uninspiring performances. And you're right, he's taking care of the football. No picks in six straight games. Only the second Steelers quarterback in history in a single season to do that. But as I said, in some sense, you almost wish that there was a pick, because maybe it meant that you were trying to do something downfield. So you're right, it can't all rest at the feet of Kenny Pickett. And it's frustrating to hear, for not the first time this season, them say after the game that we thought we were going to get a different look from that defense, and they presented something different than what we game planned for, what we expected, and it really hurt us. But at the same point, I'm sure that happens around the league every single week, and teams adjust and they come up with counters and answers and play that chess match. And Pittsburgh seemingly did not. But again, just how disjointed this passing game was, all the miscommunication, guys not being on the same page. I mean, for this late in the season, for a group that was healthy defensively, you could at least have some excuses, because there's a bunch of injuries and new faces rotating in. This is the lineup that Pittsburgh had in training camp in week one. They work with these guys all year. So to have this level of miscommunication, even for a road game, even for a tough environment, they played in Cleveland before, they know what it's like. That just is unacceptable.
Yeah, Kenny has regressed, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's an understatement, I think. So where else to go from here offensively, Dave?
I think you look at what Jaylen Warren did in this game, and the fact that he only touched the football in the running game 9 times and three more times, I think, in the passing game. That is an error on the coaching staff overall. Mike Tomlin says, you know, you don't look back at it and regret any of that and all. But and this isn't the first time that we've talked about Jaylen Warren and providing, you know, giving you more when he's out there on the field. I mean, that son of a gun runs hard, man. And there were some, you know, and look. It was blocked up really, really well on the long touchdown run of his, but there were other runs in this game where he made some fantastic reads and cuts, and just his ability to get extra yards after first contact. It is, especially with the way the passing game is and has been, it is kind of criminal to look at this game overall, especially when you get into the fourth or into the second half, and specifically after his touchdown run. Mm-hmm. It is criminal, I think, to look back at this and say, man, how did that guy only? And look, they didn't have a large complement of snaps overall, but you ever heard of the hot hand phrase and all, you know, and all like that. The fact that he only touched the ball 12 times in this game, could 3 more touches have made a difference in this game? It very well could have. This was a winnable game. This was a classic setup for the way the Steelers like to win games right now. It was set up for them to do this. Mm-hmm. The final 2 offensive possessions this team had, it was set up for them to be a 13-10 Steelers win in this one. And we would be talking more about the win than we would anything else in this one. But because you did not get it done in those situations where you have gotten it done more times than not this season, just the way they like to kind of draw it up, it leads you to nitpick things like this, and specifically the amount of touches for Jaylen Warren. So, and look, Najee was not awful in this game, but Warren was better.
Sure. I thought Harris was running hard early, but then it became very clear that this was a Jaylen Warren game. He was bringing the spark. I mean, he created so much, the 74-yard touchdown, the big chunk run play. It's the longest rushing touchdown that Pittsburgh has had since Willie Parker in Super Bowl XL on that famous 75-yard run behind a polling Alan Faneca. And Faneca was now hosting the watch party in Ireland for this game. That's how long it's been. So here's a stat for you. So Jaylen Warren had that 74-yard touchdown on the second play of the second half of the third quarter. For the entire rest of the third quarter, of which Pittsburgh had multiple possessions, he touched the ball 1 time the rest of the quarter. Now, I understand on maybe
and that was another toss, wasn't
it? It was for 8 yards. Yeah, it was for 8 yards. There was a completion that was a screen pass that was negated by penalty, so he technically touched it twice, but in terms of what counted, only once. Now, maybe the ensuing possession, you could argue that Warren was still a little gassed and you give Harris a drive. Okay, I can get that. But then after that, they have 2 more possessions, and he doesn't touch the ball. He touched the ball once on a 2nd and 20. How do you justify that? How do you, in a game where Warren goes for 129 yards, leads the NFL in rushing heading into Monday night, how does Najee Harris get 13 carries and Warren gets 9? I mean, I've been generally okay with the split, and I've been happy with the rotation. In this game, as you said, hot hand, Warren's the guy. How do you not lean on that guy more on a day where he's your sole source of offense?
Alex, let this sink in. I know you already have. Let listeners let this sink in. Jaylen mm-hmm. Warren now leads the Steelers in total yards from scrimmage with 727 yards from scrimmage.
Was that on your bingo card to start this year, Dave?
No.
It wasn't mine.
No. Now, look, I thought Jalen Warren probably have a nice season and all like that, but especially with Najee staying healthy and all like that, if you would have, if I had been in a coma and just got up and you said Jalen Warren leads the Steelers in total yards from scrimmage with 727, I would want to know how many games has Najee missed, how many has George Pickens missed, how many has Deontay missed, and obviously Deontay has missed some games in there. But I would be scratching my head. Why is he leading and why does he have that many yards? And it's a testament to how good he's been besides everything else here. So they have a player in this in Jalen Warren, and now at this point you've got to figure out how can we get him more touches.
Right. I mean, thank God he's there. If it wasn't for him, what would this offense look like? And he still could lead the team in receptions when this year is done. He's second on the team with 34. George Pickens is first with 37. No Steelers running back has led the team in receptions since John L. Williams back in the mid-90s. Just a little kind of the weird for you there. We'll see if that one comes true or not. But, I mean, Warren was the offense, and it was, I thought that was great blocking on that 74-yarder. I thought Mason Cole out in space, excellent. Miles Boykin, Broderick Jones. That was probably a bit more blocking related than it was Warren, but it was great to see that second kind of gear that he had in the open field to run away from everybody. But beyond that, I mean, just stiff arming guys, power runs, screen passes, creating something out of nothing. He was the offense. He was the only guy that provided any sort of hope and movement and anything in this game. And the guy has 9 carries. And to me, that just thought, an acceptable outcome. Mike Tomlin could talk about no second guessing. Someone should be second guessing that. You have to.
This is your is this your team MVP right now? I mean, there's a lot to show. I mean, obviously Watt's having a great year and all like that. I guess it'd be Watt and then maybe Warren, right?
I hadn't thought about a listing offensively, just to kind of focus
offensively.
On that. Yes, I think so. Overall, I mean, this team is still driven by its defense, so they probably get the edge just based on how the team. I mean, honestly, it might be Chris Boswell. I mean, Chris Boswell right. has been their best source of offense and points overall. But Warren has been a spark continually, and I don't know if they're ever going to change the depth chart that says that Jalen Warren's a starter. But I think at this point, you're going to go from kind of a pretty even split to now, things leaning towards Warren's direction in terms of playing time and touches. At least it should be.
Yeah, man, look, we saw offensive linemen on the move a lot in this game again, so kudos to them for that. Saw Broderick pulling right to left quite a few times in this game. You saw Sayamalo on the move the other way. They were good. They were seemingly good for the most part run blocking out in space. And the big question is why couldn't you get the football in Jalen Warren's hands more?
He is averaging, and I just looked at the number, he is averaging 6.2 mm-hmm. yards per carry this year. That's like Oklahoma State, Big 12 open space type of numbers. And it's 80 carries, so it's not a super small number of carries. And compare that to Najee Harris at 3.9 yards per carry, run success rate according to PFR. Najee Harris, 43%. Jalen Warren now 52.5%. Those numbers were pretty even for the first 5 or so games of the season, and Warren's really come on strong lately. Obviously, a 74-yarder helps bring up those numbers for the yards per carry, but that's kind of the point, to get those big plays, big explosive runs. And so, kudos to that guy. And I just love – I didn't even realize – I love to see the CBS broadcast. They showed him at rookie minicamp with his helmet on because he never takes his helmet off. And you just kind of love the mentality of that guy. And again, he's been the – he was, in this game, the lone source of offense.
Averaging 6.4 yards per touch overall this year.
Okay.
And you got to remember a lot of those, a lot of passes that he's catching are either behind the line of scrimmage or 1 or 2 yards past the line of scrimmage. Now, other things, this team still can't run screens to save their life.
It's painful.
Any kind of screens. And let's go back to that. We've written about it. Dan Orlovsky talked about it this morning there, that play early on on that screen over to the left side. Now, they've tried to run that a few times this year, but this one really looked funky, didn't it? I mean, you don't have – the wide receivers on that side weren't blocking overall. I mean, it looked, and Kenny Pickett's decision, he doesn't even look, give any kind of nomer that he's going anywhere else other than Jalen right after the snap there on that one. That was a curious play call. I don't know if there was an assignment issue. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on that play?
Yeah, my first thought is miscommunication, because they run that play and it's become really popular around the NFL. It's basically a 4x1 with a fast four where Jalen Warren's going to kind of run to the flat at right before the snap of the football. And you have two reads on that play in that situation, either hit Warren in the flat or the backside X receiver. If you like the leverage, like the matchup, they've done both this year. So to see all the receivers go out in patterns, my first thought is that has to be miscommunication. That's why Jalen Warren had three Cleveland Browns players converging on him. So unless they were trying to work off of that and say, we're going to kind of fake the throw to Warren and maybe the defense will bite on it and we'll get a receiver open downfield, that's possible. But just given the level of miscommunication overall in this game, I have to think that there was miscommunication. So it's either that there was a breakdown in what the call was supposed to be, or they were trying to set something up. But if you're trying to set that play up, then you can't throw that to Jalen Warren, because the intent is to fool the defense and to kind of taking the cheese on Warren in the flat and you throw to somebody else. So it's either a disaster of a communication or a disaster of a decision on Kenny Pickett.
And look, did you see Deontay Johnson? Kind of shrugged and threw his hands out to the side after that play. You can kind of barely see that in the TV tape there. You can certainly take issue with whatever happened on that play, but that's one play.
Yeah, one of many in this game. And to kind of take this back to Kenny Pickett, and we can talk about Matt Canada and the struggles and the game plan concerns and expecting man, which I thought we agree, and you said it earlier, was reasonable to expect man in this game. They were put eight in the box. They were going to have their corners, you know, man up, and you know, that should create 1v1 opportunities on the outside for the Steelers. But even knowing that, just Kenny Pickett providing nothing in this game, to me, the most damning thing of all, Dave, was the actual kind of game plans and executions of both sides, of both quarterbacks, both passing offenses, were the same. You know, what the Steelers did was the same as what the Browns did. But of course, the Browns are starting a fifth-round rookie in a second career start. And Pittsburgh has a first-round pick they called their franchise quarterback who made his 22nd start. But yet both game plans were screen-heavy. You know, short passes, don't take a shot, super ultra conservative, numbers really identical overall. And when you have the same approach and game plan and results as the opposing fifth round quarterback that's being forced to start because the starter got hurt, I mean, if that does not set alarm bells off, I don't know what does.
Right. I would agree there. And look, I think even DTR had an average completed air yard depth around 2 point something, just like Kenny Pickett.
Yeah. I mean, what was the longest pass thrown downfield in this game by either side? It was not much. Nothing really went past 10 yards. And I think both defenses were trying to keep things in front, not allow the big play. I thought somebody would take a shot at some point. I mean, just from a passing game standpoint, it was one of the most just reductionist passing games that you will ever see.
Yeah. The Browns beat them at their own game.
In the sense of
don't turn the ball over, our defense do work, get it to the fourth quarter, yada yada, make a few plays on the final drive, and take it to the house with a W there.
Yeah, they did have the one pick, but it didn't, you know, they didn't have the multiple turnover game that DTR had in week 4. And
There were another one or two in there that probably could have. Trent Thompson had one.
Oh, yeah.
Hit him right in the chest. And, you know, that was one of my keys was you can't let DTR get away with some of these takeaways that are there for a taking. And that now in this game, would the Steelers have done anything with that takeaway either? Who knows there? You know, they did have the one interception there by Chandon Sullivan there, but you had to know that DTR was going to make a few mistakes in this game. He did. And then the Browns eligibles helped things out with a couple of drops in this game as well too. Once again, this set up to be a very winnable Steelers type 2023 game. Those final two possessions were just brutal for the Steelers offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, miscommunication, missed throws by Kenny Pickett, I thought maybe Deontay could have come down with a couple of those, would have had to been a tough catch, but I think he's a guy capable of making tough catches. But I mean, this offense just gets worse and worse, Dave, the further you go into this thing. And you can, Tomlin can talk about whatever he wants to talk about, the Browns defense being really good. And I know I'm kind of bouncing around here. I know that we both agree that Kenny Pickett likely to be the quarterback in 2024, but I'm struggling to see how you justify it unless something else changes over the rest of the season. Like, what is giving you that confidence other than, hey, we drafted this guy in the first round. He's supposed to be our quarterback. We have to see this through. But in terms of on-field performance, what are you seeing that says, okay, Pickett should be the guy next year?
Well, we've already said what the narrative and the excuses will be. You get rid of Matt Canada, you get rid of some others on the coaching staff there, and you reset and I mean, nobody's going to be surprised when that happens, right?
With coaching staff changes,
and Kenny Pickett getting one more shot at this thing through 2024.
Sure, no one should be. And
he's going to have to become Patrick Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes real quick for Canada to save his job. And even then, that's more on the quarterback, right?
Right there.
Cause look, you look at the average depth of, or the intended air yardage, distances and the average completed air yard distances on next gen stats and all like that. There's not that much difference between Mahomes and Pickett, and that's where you can get lulled to sleep with some of these advanced analytics. But look what Mahomes does on third down. Look at some of the extended plays that he makes. Those things that go above. That's the difference in the quarterbacks here, without a doubt. So look, should this team seriously consider, what they do in the offseason at the quarterback position? Absolutely. Will they? Probably not. At worst, what I think they should do is look at something in the third or fourth round, at least to give you something to turn to and evaluate, so you're not going to an empty well there. And look, the odds of hitting a third or fourth round quarterback, are slim, but at least it gives you something else to evaluate and turn to there. I mean, this team's not drafting a quarterback in the first or second round, right?
No, but I am of the mindset if you're going to make a change of quarterback, you're either all in or all out. I think I understand your point about a third, fourth kind of mid-round quarterback, but
I'd rather just
go all in or go all out.
Right, that's just dipping your toe in the water. The only other option that you have is to go outside and spend money on a veteran. And even then, Kirk Cousins' name's being thrown around and all like that. But that would be very un-Steeler-like.
Sure. No, I don't expect any of those things to happen. But I know those are discussions to have more after the season, and I've been steadfast remain. Adamant that I will fully conclude and evaluate Pickett after the season, because you never know what can happen over the rest of the season. Pittsburgh, they're still 6-4. If the season ended today, they'd still be in the playoffs. They are the seventh seed as things sit here right now. So I don't want to pretend like the season is over, despite how ugly and miserable of a loss that it was, which it absolutely was. But I just look at Kenny Pickett and say, if the excuse from Tomlin is, well, the Browns have a great defense, if that justifies Kenny Pickett having under 100 yards passing until the final essentially meaningless play of the game against the Browns, then you're never going to win a Super Bowl, because you're going to have to face a good defense or a great scoring offense or some sort of high level adversity to win a playoff game, to win a conference championship game, to win a Super Bowl. Like if the reason for this game is, well, the Browns just have a great defense, then you're just never going to get to where your goal is supposed to be.
Yeah. Look, you can't keep redrawing the line in the sand.
And
pushing it back 1 week and saying, well, this week and this week or next year with the OC, it hasn't been great. And look, I mean, you've got some, this team's going to win more games this year. This team might still get the playoffs, really, right? Realistically, if they win some of these games. Look, they have 6 wins now. You have to think 10 gets you in. Maybe it won't. I don't know. Some of these teams in here. But, I mean, you have to like your chances with 10 wins. You have 7 games left, right? 3 of them are within in the division. You would like to think that you're going to have to win at least one of those 3, with the first one coming this week against Cincinnati. You've got Arizona. You've got the Colts. You've got the Patriots. I mean, surely this team can ugly up 4 more wins, right? And if they can't, oh man, do you have problems?
Right. I mean, they've got nothing but ugly wins and a couple ugly. It's all been ugly. It's either been ugly wins or ugly losses. There really has been no in between this year for this team. But yeah, and again, this is not just about the Browns game. You look at the Packers game, the Titans game, the first half of the Jags game. Not much is telling you that Kenny Pickett is playing at a level that he needs to play at. And it's hard to know exactly why he's regressed, though, because, you know, we were talking about second year jumps. Now we're talking about regression. And it's not like the roster around him is worse than it was last year, or there's a bunch of injuries. His team has gotten healthier over the course of the season, getting Deontay back, getting Freiermuth back for this game. Pickens has been healthy. The run game has been strong overall the last month or so, and healthy as well. So I don't know, Dave. I kind of threw my hands up at this point.
Yeah, look, they've got we'll see. That's all. The proof will be in the pudding moving forward here. Once again, they have some winnable games here, but I mean, it's got to start looking a lot better than what it's looked like here lately.
I will say, in some fairness to Pickett, he was under pressure pretty consistently mm-hmm. in this game. And I had praised Pittsburgh against the Browns, really just kind of big picture against any sort of star defensive player, that they've done a really good job at not letting those guys write the headlines. Those guys have made some plays. They've been involved. They've, you know, gotten good PFF scores, all that kind of stuff, but they had not taken over the game. And Myles Garrett had always never really gotten to that point against Pittsburgh, because they had either been able to minimize him through chips, or just kind of, you know, marrying their protection scheme versus their you know, drop back scheme, a 3-step drop. If Dan Moore is going to be 1v1 on Myles Garrett, so the ball comes out quick, you're going to do a 5 or 7-step drop, you're going to chip and give help. So, you know, Garrett doesn't have the time or the ability to get into the backfield in this game. I mean, the first offensive play, you're on your 7. I think Pickett took a 5-step drop. Moore's 1v1 on Garrett, and Garrett beats Moore inside and sacks Pickett for arguably a safety, and that kind of set the tone for the rest of the day. So this was a game where Myles Garrett took over, which surely had not ever happened before.
Yeah, look, you expect him, and you go back to that first game. He won his, you know, he won his one-on-one battles, and his win rate was high as you'd expect. He just didn't impact the game overall outside of hidden, you know, the pressure situation, which he had those in that first game. The thing that you feared, which was one of the keys, and it was an obvious key in this game, is not letting him really, you know, show up on the raw stat sheet. And boy, did he show up in this one, as did the rest of the pass rush overall. The Steelers pass protection as a whole was not great in this game. But even so, you got to situations that we talked about earlier in this game of third and less than 5 situations. If you make a few of those and convert those, you might come out of that game with a win still.
Sure. But yeah, I thought Garrett, you know, and we said this in week 2, and I know that maybe there was some pushback about that. I thought Myles Garrett had a really good game against Dan Moore in week 2, but they just minimized that through, again, just, I thought, good play calling and just being able to kind of take him away and make sure that Garrett won his reps, but did not get to the quarterback because of it. In this game, I thought it was kind of a repeat of week 2. It was Garrett cooking Dan Moore, but because you were taking longer drops and you were in some third and long situations, and Pittsburgh just didn't find ways to minimize him the way that it usually had been able to, Garrett, you kind of felt the impact of that all the more in this one. So it's obviously a really tough matchup for Dan Moore. It's hard to blame the guy, but to me, you know, there was this narrative that Dan Moore was really good against Myles Garrett, and I've always kind of downplayed that and said it's kind of been, he's hanging on for dear life and just kind of gotten fortunate by a split second a couple times. And this game, I think, highlighted that that narrative is probably dead for good.
Yeah, I would agree.
Any other thoughts here with the offensive line? Obviously, all 22 will probably reveal things more, but any other takeaways here, Dave?
Yeah, look, just a better run blocking team than they were in pass protection, for sure.
Yeah, that is for sure on this one. So Let's flip over to the defense here. And it was a bit of a tough start as the Browns scored on their second possession on a pretty lengthy drive to put the ball in the end zone, a short Jerome Ford touchdown. Other than that, though, the takeaway is that Pittsburgh allowed 13 points to this Browns team, including the three in the final, you know, seconds of the game. So 10 until the final, you know, 5 seconds. While the defense, we can critique it and talk about some things they should have done better. I mean, it's hard to be too mad about that performance when you're holding an NFL offense to 10 points until the final seconds of the game.
Yeah, I think the only thing that you really, really circle when it comes to this defense was the final drive. I think DTR was, 4 of 5 for like, 39 or 49 yards? And his only incompletion was a spike. Look, we can talk about that delay of game on Keanu Benton. That that was just them doing a pre just shifting, right? And it was a weird pill. The Browns are still probably going to be in field goal range without that there. Of course, it does move it back 5 yards. You never know, but that seemed like a bogus call there on Benton overall there. But I think the biggest negative takeaway for this Steelers defense would potentially be that final drive where they gave up a lot of, you know, stuff underneath there. They did not give up any explosive plays in this game. They had the one interception. You probably should have had a second one in this game, but you know, I thought they did fairly well against the run overall in this thing. And look, I mean, you put your offense in position to have two drives at the end of the game to win it, and they don't do it. And then what did the Steelers play total offensive snaps in this? 70-something?
73? What did the Steelers offense have or the defense?
Defense, 73. Yeah. You know, you're getting worn down a little bit in those situations. Boy, Cam Hayward was spit at the end of that one. I would imagine Watt and Highsmith were too, because Herbig only played 3 snaps.
Yeah, I think Golden got a bit more action in this
8.
One.
Golden had 8. Herbig had 3 in this one. You know, once again, I think the real negative in this when it comes to the Steelers defense is they couldn't get off the field in that final time.
Sure. And TJ Watt after the game talking about how we got to find a way to not allow those 5-yard throws, said it's been an issue all season long. And I mean, you knew they were throwing short. I mean, the entire game plan for the Browns when they did pass the ball and they tried to pass the ball as little as possible, but spread the field out, get the ball out real quick. I mean, within 2 seconds, basically whenever DTR hit the top of his drop, the ball's going to come out, which is the right game plan to have. And they were going to throw short, and they were hitting more in Cooper and Njoku. And Pittsburgh really did not have a good answer. They were playing pretty conservatively in this one. So I'll have to see the all 22 on that. So that is a right critique. But again, not to excuse this, but it shouldn't have gotten to that point. This offense should have done more to not let that be the deciding factor in this one.
Joey Porter had his hands full with Amari Cooper in this game. He did have a nice breakup in the end zone on one of those drives there, but it was a bit of a grow up game, I think. And, you know, maybe it's going to be one of those iron sharpened iron type situations where Porter will, you know, chalk up some experience and get better moving forward. But even so, once again, you know, they did not give up any explosive plays in this game. Landon Roberts was a Landon Roberts in this game. Landon Roberts played exactly like his scouting report. That guy can play downhill, you know, and this game set up really, really well for him to do it. So, I mean, are we surprised that Landon Roberts came out of this game with 15 combined tackles? You know, you probably may have predicted 12, maybe even 13. But you know, I thought overall he played a good game overall. From what I can tell on the TV tape, I thought Trent Thompson represented himself fairly well in this game for what he was asked to do. It didn't feel like there were a lot of missed tackles. There were a couple situations where I was thinking, wrap up, boys, wrap up. But look, defense did not lose this game for the Steelers.
Right. Yeah, that's a takeaway on that one for sure. Yeah, Roberts, 15 tackles, most tackles by a Steeler since Vince Williams, I believe in 2016 was in my stats of the weird column today. He was really good, and it was his type of game, as you said, downhill, physical, even in coverage. It was short stuff, but, I mean, he was tackling in the flats, and I think maybe Njoku heard footsteps a couple times, dropped a couple passes, so it didn't stress him in the way that we're concerned about in terms of that vertical aspect of it, but even in coverage, kudos to him. I thought Roberts had a really good game overall. He was the every down, all situations linebacker, which I figured he would be for a communication standpoint, even in dime packages. It was Roberts out there on the field. A really good game by him, and that was needed, and they need that going forward.
Could have used a better pass rush in this and in the situations where DTR had to hold the ball a little bit longer, but it didn't feel like there were many of those anyway. Mm-hmm. Look, he was trying to get the ball out quick. They knew they knew what they were up against with their tackle situation right in this game, so they knew not to let those edge guys take over the game overall. In this one. So yeah, I mean, you would have liked to have more impact in some certain situations there where he had to hold the ball, and you know, you could ding the defense maybe a little bit for that. But once again, it comes down to points allowed on the scoreboard and explosive plays, and they handling the run, and they did that for the most part.
Yeah, run defense was really solid overall. I thought Cam Hayward was excellent against the run. I thought Hayward played a good game overall. Again, the pass rush may not have been there, but making plays against the run, some great open field tackles. There was the one on Pierre Strong on second down. I think a little pass on the left flat, screen play or whatever it was, and he makes a tackle there that if he doesn't, that might have gone for quite a ways. Yeah, that pass rush, even in those third and longs Cleveland was in, they were just running screens, and they weren't trying to, you know, get a bunch of yards on third and 13. They were just kind of playing punts, play field position overall. They're running quarterback power on third and four, that kind of stuff, just to minimize the exposure that DTR would have in those situations with their backup tackles. So, I mean, the pass rush has been, you know, quiet, but in a game like this, it's hard to really knock the defense too much for that. Again, I think overall they did their job. They give the offense ample opportunities to win this game, and the offense just said no thank you.
Thank God the defense only allowed less than 100 total net yards in the second half to the Browns. Now, obviously, whatever the final drive was, kudos to the Browns on that one, and shame on the Steelers. Once again, if you boil this thing down and want to get on the Steelers defense, I think the fact that outside of that second drive of the game, the one at the end there where DTR went 4 or 5 for whatever it was, 39, 49 yards. That's what you point to.
Sure. Pittsburgh's whole mantra this season and really the last couple of years has been win the final 5 minutes, and they did not win the final 5 minutes of this game. I mean, literally with 5 minutes to go, they had the ball second and 10, tie game at 10 at the Browns 40, and they don't even come close to kicking a field goal. They take a 5 yard loss on second and 10 to Najee, third and 15, 2 yard completion to Jalen Warren, fourth and 13 from the Browns 43. They have to punt, and I just give Boz a chance with how good that guy has been. I mean, you're at heck if they just sit on the ball at the 40, you might even try the 57 yarder right there with Boswell and give him a chance to go ahead on that one. So, but you lose yardage, and now it's, you know, a 60 yard attempt, and you really can't justify it there. But all you had to do was just at the 40, just get a couple yards, just get 5 yards and give Boz a chance. And you can't do that as an offense. Regardless of how good the Browns are, you can't get 5 yards second and 10 from the 40 on two plays. Just get 5 yards. You lose yards instead. I mean, I know it's a great defense, but how low are we going to set this bar for this offense to just do nothing and excuse it away?
Look, those final two drives were brutal. And it started with even Pickens bailing out. And did he even catch that? If that gets reviewed,
it's a sideline throw, and Pickett throws it inside, and Pickens has to adjust. Like, how do you miss that throw? I mean, just hit the root. I mean, that's the issue with Pickett. It's like, just hit the routine stuff. He's not done that the last month.
Well, we have seen him be able to make those throws. He's just not making them consistently enough now. You know.
Yeah, but I think even over the last month in particular, they've really not been there almost at all. I mean, occasionally, sure, but. He's a quarterback. He should be hitting on stuff, you know, occasionally, but there's just some routine stuff that's there that's even just been a struggle.
And look, you can get on the play calling here in those final two drives. I mean, you get that completion to Pickens, and then you try to run that. Didn't they try to run that screen on first down right after that? That was incomplete or something. Mm-hmm. And then you go left guard to Najee for a loss of 5 yards. I mean, why isn't Warren in the game? And you know, why isn't Warren? That's one of those situations where, you know, obviously it's a results based thing, but I mean, negative 5 yards there, and now you're back to second. You know, you're in a second and 10 situation there. And then third down, because you lost right. 5 yards, is a give up down. So you have to, then you go to Warren and say, go hunt us a first down here.
Is that a screen on 3rd and 15? I don't remember.
That was that one over to the right side. Yeah.
It was a screen.
I don't know if it was a screen. I can't remember if it was a design throw out that way or not, but okay. And he only gets 2 yards on that. So, I mean, you obviously have to, you know, you're not going to go for it on 4th and 13 in that situation. So you have to punt. Mm-hmm. Your defense gets the ball back eventually there, but and then you know, not awful field position. 1st and 10 at your own 30, and you throw 3 incomplete passes to Deontay Johnson, and off the field you go.
14 seconds off the clock, and that gave the Browns a chance to win that one late. That was what the first down on that final Pittsburgh possession, but besides the last play of the game, we'll throw that one aside for a second. It was right flat to Deontay, maybe got his head around late, just off. Second down was that deep shot where you had the clip of Ben saying, "I am so confused, don't know who that was for." That was for Deontay miscommunication. Johnson broke his route off. Pickett thought he was going to run deep. That one falls incomplete. And then third down, don't love the concept. Again, all these routes are independent of each other, but it was there. There was a chance for that pass to be completed. Pickett's pass a little high. I thought Johnson could have made a better attempt at it. 2 hands, I think, would have been better than just trying to throw up his right hand on that one, but incomplete there as well. So no fourth quarter magic in this one.
Look, it was there for their taking on those final 2 offensive drives, as bad as they played.
Yeah, it absolutely was. But again, I just thought the miscommunication, just how disjointed this group looked, it was really alarming to me, not just on that possession, but just the entire game. I felt the offense in the pass game in particular was never on the same page. Sounds like they had a poor game plan in this one. They didn't marry their protection schemes with their pass concepts well. It's an obvious statement probably, but my first impression was Canada did not call a good game, but we'll have to see the All-22 on that one. So again, I don't want to put this all on Pickett, but my feelings towards Pickett, the article I wrote this morning on Kenny Pickett, talking about him being as clear a problem as ever, is not just about this game, but the weight, the totality of the last month, and just how much things have regressed.
Well, my main takeaway is if you're not registering these explosive plays to the passing game, you better be better on third down. And it was something that we asked the listeners to look at in this game. And 3 of 14, and you're not getting explosive plays on those other on 1st and 2nd downs. That, you know. And you're not taking the ball away 3 or 4 times on the other side. Mm-hmm. That you're just asking for it.
And would you say 7 of 25 on third down the last 2 weeks, something like that?
Yeah, yeah,
something really bad. Obviously,
I'll have to look exactly what that number is, but it obviously isn't great.
It just feels like the Pittsburgh's asking its defense, "Can you guys go get 4 takeaways and put one in the end zone, and that's how we win?" I mean, that's just. Again, that goes back to sustainability. We had the joke of they were sustaining the unsustainable, and now it's no longer sustained.
7 of 27 in their last 2 games on third downs, 25.9%. And once again, what is it? 3 explosive passing games in their last, or 3 explosive passing plays in their last 4 games. None yesterday. That's hard to do.
That is so brutal. I mean, that is just really, yeah, you're right. It's hard to do that. I mean, heck, you see, and I wrote this in the article, even Tommy DeVito with the Giants.
he was good in that movie. Touchdowns. I like that character.
Right? And that that knockoff Sopranos movie that they turned around. I mean, even he put up 31 points and threw 3 touchdowns, 2 things that Kenny Pickett's never done in his career. Like, even these bad quarterbacks have that occasional moment of, hey, that's a good game. That was something you can at least tell your kids about. And you're not even seeing that with Kenny Pickett. And that's a really concerning thing. This 22 starts in where you can, you know, I know you can talk about Canada, but you can evaluate Pickett still. And the evaluation is not promising.
All right. Special teams, as we start putting a bow on this one.
Yeah, Presley Harvin, not a good game for him. I mean, it started decently, and there were, I think, four inside the 20, although I thought some of them maybe you could have really pinned them deep as opposed to maybe the 10, but a couple of shanks, including a 20-yarder, and the one before that was a low liner that went 42 yards. I believe had a 21 yards a net on that, so those are, you know, essentially two 20-yard punts for you. And in a game where field position was paramount, you saw how important that was in the Browns' first possession, where they pinned Pittsburgh back, almost get a safety off of that to get good field position on the ensuing punt and put the ball in the end zone. Harvin has been better overall this season, but a poor game for him on Sunday.
Calvin Austin, couple decisions.
Yeah, letting a couple bounce over his head. And you know, I don't know exactly what the rules are for that in terms of where Danny Smith kind of says, okay, if it goes, put your feet at here. If it goes over your head, then let it bounce. But there are a couple that felt like that he could have been able to catch to prevent Pittsburgh being so backed up, including on that first punt.
Did you think they were going to win this game in the fourth quarter? When it got to that point with, let me take you back in time here to a time stamp here. Their second to last possession happened at, where was it? 5:47, first and 10 at the Steelers 48. Did you think at that moment in time they were going to win this game?
I don't know if I really had a feeling either way. I generally don't get that in game. I was thinking to myself,
well, this movie's going to play out just like the other ones. I envisioned them hitting some sort of a Yankee concept or something if they got the right look for the one big play over the middle or something to get them down in field goal range. I honestly thought that the way they had skated things up until that point. And as bad as they played at 5:47 left in the game, I really was thinking they were going to get out of there with a W.
Well, you're right. It is the same script that had been playing out in their last six wins. So you're not wrong to think that they could do it again. I just had a sinking feeling after watching that Browns touchdown drive in the first quarter and said, okay, this is going to be a day. So I didn't really have an opinion either way. I just kind of just get lost in the game and just, you know, I'm along for the ride.
All right. What about the post game stuff? We probably buried that lead long enough.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to talk about there. And I'm sure we will continue this conversation for Wednesday. And we just want to talk about the game first. But Najee Harris, his comments after the game, a lot of frustration. I think maybe the most, I don't know,
gaming?
Yeah. I don't know how you want to phrase it, but what he was asked about. Do you believe that everybody in this locker room has a team first mentality? And Harris was asked to repeat the question and then had a really long pause and then said, I don't want to talk about the team. I want to talk about just me and my performance. And then the PR person very quickly stepped in and said, we got to go to Cleveland, guys. And go back to Pittsburgh, guys. Yeah. You know what I mean? What is your takeaway of that comment and non-answer from Najee Harris?
Well, I just think you got to read off his other ones too. And he had said something to the effect of you could look at the record and say, okay, we're still good right now. Or you could look at this record and be like, if we keep playing this type of football, how long is that beep going to last? Mm-hmm. I look at it like, how long is this bleep going to last? He says, y'all can look at it like it's a good record, but I mean, it's the NFL. Winning like how we did is not going to get us nowhere. He said he also admitted that there are times it seems that a defense knows what they're doing on offense. I'm just at a point where I'm just tired of this beep. And you combine those kind of comments with the other ones about, you know, and him basically saying we're going to have a meeting about this. And I mean, this is one of your, this is an offensive leader, right? This is a guy, this is a leader. Maybe this is him, you know, it could be taken as him leading by saying some of this stuff to the media. But these are more pebbles in the shoe.
Well, to me, I mean, the most concerning part, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, is that non-answer when asked about the team. Because, yeah, you can talk about how bad the offense is. That's known. Like, we all understand how bad this offense is and how much they're struggling and the sustainability concerns that we and the media and the collective fan base has had about, you know, can they continue to win as ugly as they had been? And, of course, they lose that game ugly against the Browns. But when you're asked about the team and the locker room and the players and almost like their character, and you get just nothing from Harris on that, that could speak to a larger issue just beyond the basic realization that this offense is bad.
Yeah, there's something obviously going on that he does not think that he's getting, you know, 100% buy-in as teammates.
Right. And to me, that's a larger issue than just saying this offense is bad. And more, I don't know how you want to say it, just more, it's a more interesting discussion to have than just, you know, relaying about how miserable this offense has been.
At one point he said, I want to say what I really want to say, but it's difficult. There's something there.
Yeah.
You know, and him also saying, do I think everybody is a team first on this team? I'd rather not talk about team. I'll just talk about me and my performance if you're going to ask questions about me. So
that's a red flag if I've seen one. It's like saying, yeah, like, do you love your wife? I'd rather talk about me. You know, don't talk about my wife. I want to talk about me. You know, like that kind of stuff where it's like, okay, that's a softball down the middle of, you would expect the answer to be, oh yeah, we're all in, we're buying in, we got to just come together and we'll fix this. And when the answer is a long pause like that, but even longer, I shortened it for you guys, and then deflecting, that says a lot.
You know, people look to us for our superior analysis. Alex, here, here's some superior analysis that I put out there on Twitter this morning. Not only do the Steelers have a serious quarterback/OC problem, they have a serious locker room problem based on what Najee Harris put out there post game. Will be interesting on Tuesday to see what Mike Tomlin says about the latter. You know, that's why they listen to us, Alex. Look, that's a Captain Obvious thing there, right? But there's, you know, not only do you have a quarterback OC problem, and it's hard to come away and spin whatever Najee was trying to say in that locker room after that game as any sort of a positive. And it'll be interesting to see Mike Tomlin peppered with this on Tuesday. He'll probably say, I don't know exactly what Najee said, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Handle it internally, blah, blah, blah. You know, we just got to execute, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there's something going on there, obviously.
Yeah, there is. And to me, in a lot of ways, this is more of a story and more concerning than the George Pickens stuff, because Pickens, younger guy, 22, little immature, just frustrated about not getting the ball. Okay, you know, that's kind of standard fare. But Harris, a leader, I think a really mature guy overall, and he's showing the frustration to this point and saying and implying those things. That says something bigger and more alarming.
And part of this, look, are they all happy with the way Kenny Pickett's playing in there? Probably not. But this also smells of we don't have confidence in what we're doing just overall offensively, schematically.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably that and a lot of things. I have the thought, and I don't want to sound too... Okay, I'll be like Najee Harris.
Just say
it's difficult to say. I wonder if this frustration with how much Tomlin seems to protect Kenny Pickett, because he never really seems to point the finger at him. He'll point the finger at somebody else, or just say the defense played a great game. And at some point, you kind of look at the quarterback and say, "Hey, man, you got to start making some plays here. Like, you got to really start helping us in the pursuit of victory, as opposed to at best being sidecar and at worst kind of being an anchor on this team." And I think Tomlin, and I get what Tomlin's doing, because he doesn't want to have that storyline, that headline of, you know, Tomlin has this kind of spicy comment about Kenny Pickett that becomes a headline for the next 48 hours. But I wonder if there's a frustration about just kind of, to me, how far and how much Tomlin will go out of his way to kind of minimize Pickett's concerns and focus on other issues.
Do you think that skilled players in that locker room would like to see them go to Trubisky?
I don't know if that's...
If you guaranteed them 100% anonymity and all, I wonder what each of them would say.
I'm sure some feel like that, like that in that way. I don't know if there's a consensus upon it.
And look, I'm not trying to paint Mitch Trubisky as any type of savior here. I mean, if anything, he's going to turn the football over for you. But within that, he is going to take more chances down the field.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. There's no question about that. Yeah, I mean, I just think it was a general frustration with the whole offense and not just one person. But I think, again, you're the quarterback. It starts with you and Kenny Pickett. And you're not getting better. You're getting worse. And there's a frustration of we just can't move the football. And it's like Zach Wilson with the Jets. You know, the frustration that existed there with how bad this offense was. It wasn't all on Zach Wilson, but it started with him and the frustration that was born out of that.
Would you consider that they won't? We know they won't. But would you consider a quarterback change here against Cincinnati?
Well, I mean, I've talked about Trubisky and my concern with him, given the fact that Pittsburgh seemingly has no margin for error and him being, you know, the turnover kind of prone and a bit more reckless is, I think, difficult, does not comport with Pittsburgh's plan. I have thought about how would Mason Rudolph look running this offense, and I'm not pretending like this offense would come alive and put up 30 points per game, but could it be run more efficiently? I think Rudolph would do some of the routine things that Pickett is failing to do right now.
And look, what is the message at this point? Even if you right now went from Pickett to Trubisky, what does that say?
Yeah, I mean, that almost says the end of Kenny Pickett's tenure as the Pittsburgh Steelers' supposed franchise quarterback.
Right, they're not going to do that.
No, I expect Pickett to be the quarterback. I mean, at least not for the Bengals game. I guess we'll kind of take it week by week, but I have full expectation that Kenny Pickett will be this team's quarterback against the Bengals on Sunday.
And through the 2024 season.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll think about that once the season ends, but that's probably what it's likely going to be.
I mean, your post this morning was pretty to the point that, you know, if he's not the quarterback this season, they need to think about, you know, if they can't get more out of him moving forward this season, they really need to look at that.
Which to me is a very basic, simple argument that really can't even be debated. Like, if Pickett's play does not improve, if this track continues the rest of the way or on a similar path with maybe some little bit of improvement here and there, I mean, how do you justify it other than just saying, well, we drafted the guy? Like, what would be the argument to continue playing Kenny Pickett if this continues?
All right, we're spinning our wheels there now. You want to get to, we got a bunch of reader emails. We'll try to get to as many as we can.
Yeah, let's get to some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right. AG writes in, hey, guys, great show. I imagine this is going to be number one topic of the emails, but I have to point out one shocking stat. Jaylen Warren is averaging more yards per attempt rushing than Pickett is passing on the season. Warren also has a higher success rate in the passing game than Pickens, not to mention Freiermuth. Austin Robinson seems criminal to lose that game, having run Warren 9 times compared to 33 dropbacks, especially given the last 2 drives. You ran Warren 0 times and needed to burn clock, not save it. At some point, number 2, you have to eliminate option routes from Deontay's route tree. He asked, number 3, if this is what the offense is going to be, Miles Boykin should be starting.
I mean, there's a lot there. Obviously, I don't know about the option routes. I understand trying to minimize miscommunication, which was an issue in this game, but does that make your offense somehow even more static? So I don't know about that. Yeah, Warren needs to touch the ball more. I think we covered that pretty well. Those are my thoughts.
Right. We hit on a lot of that already. Paul Brown, David Ox, first off, I got to take my hat off and hand it to the defense. They balled out most of the game. Trent Thompson played very well for being called up from the practice squad, breaking up passes and being a willing tackler. Second, as you guys mentioned over and over in previous podcasts, we're running out of material to talk about regarding the offense. We really are. Week after week, it's the same thing, although it's good to see the running game is improving. That's really the only thing, main takeaway. Last 3 games specifically, man, they've been able to run the ball. And we just keep complaining about the same stuff, he writes. My question is if Kenny and the passing offense continue to struggle in the same trajectory to finish out the year, are you coming off the stance that there is no chance the Steelers don't look at a quarterback in round one of 2024 draft? I think you guys have an idea of the type quarterback he is, and I doubt he is one that can lead the team to a Super Bowl. So if that's the case, why keep a guy like that as a star? Look, You guys have to remember what our thoughts are, what we think the team will do are 2 different things, you know. It will take a lot from this point forward for me to think that the Steelers will seriously look at drafting a quarterback in round one, especially where it looks like they'll probably have to. And I haven't even looked at the quarterback class, you know, and all. I know it's, you know, supposedly better than it's been in a couple of years, yada yada, but I just don't see this team, regardless of how this thing goes, looking at a quarterback in round one.
Well, I think you're right where they're picking. Let's call it somewhere in the, at best, teens, like, you know, 18, 19, maybe in that 20-something range. It's going to be tough to get a quarterback there. But should they is the question. Just from our personal standpoint, if this continues, the answer, I think, has to be yes. Or at least it has to be the thought, the consideration. Or if they run it back with Pickett in 24, the question has to be why. What is giving you that confidence? It almost becomes a sunk cost fallacy of, well, we drafted the guy and he's our first round guy, so we play him. Well, that can't be the reason alone.
Look, if he doesn't play any better than he's played to date on a more continual basis, should they look at it? Yes.
I think you're right about that. And to me, it has to be not just play better, because I think he will eventually play a bit better in some game. He can't play much worse at this point, but like there has to be something that really gives you some hope where you're sitting there stating the case for the guy, not just saying, well, it's better than the really bad it's been. Like there has to be something that gives you confidence. There has to be a statement game where you sit there and say, you played a complete game. You played a really strong game. It may have just been one game, but it was, you know, a great game. And there has to be that on your resume through two seasons. And by the end of the season, almost 30 starts that says, okay, there's at least that glimmer of hope that we can sit there and talk about and focus on and see and project and work on to give you confidence going forward.
Well, what the glimmer of hope will wind up being is, well, a change in offensive coordinator will be the glimmer of hope.
No, I get that. But it, again, at some point, those things are valid. But at some point, you have to talk about the quarterback and the man and say, how are you playing? You know, what is your role in this offense sucking? I mean, there has to be something to that than just blaming it on everybody else about, oh, they're doubling Pickens and Canada's bad and the O-line and this and that. At some point, it has to go back to the quarterback.
Brian Tolini writes in, good morning, Dave and AK. I have two quick questions that may have already been answered at this point in the podcast. One, if we need to see more out of Kenny Pickett, why are we asking for less? Why has Kenny Pickett looked so much worse with a strong run game? Common sense would tell you we would be able to build the pass game off the run. So, yeah, look, you would think that you're running the football better, that the passing game to some degree would get better, and it's not. And he says, if we need to see more out of Kenny Pickett, why are we asking for less?
I don't know if that's a reference to the very conservative nature of the offense. I don't know if that's where that's going. I just feel like they're trying to lean on their run game and their defense and just making sure that Pickett takes care of the football, and they're conservative because they just don't have the confidence that he's making the plays to win games right now.
Chris Lookart writes out, good morning, fellas. I think the most frustrating part about the Steelers this year is that they will end up winning 9 or 10 games, squeaking into the playoffs just to lose badly in the first round. Then we end up picking at 19th or 20th overall, and we never end up with a blue chip prospect. We are historically bad, but we'll screw up the draft. He says, I'll ride or die my entire life, but that's what always happens, he says. Look, here's the big fear is they get into playoffs and they mess up and win a game.
No, I'll take that, man. My concern is they're going to be the one and done. I think the reader outlined it perfectly. So they're going to be just good enough to get in the playoffs. At like,
yeah, but what if they get in 9 or 10 wins? They get in, they win in very Steelers typical fashion in that first playoff game, 16-13, and then lose the next week. I mean, we both went into this season saying a successful season is winning a playoff game. What if it looks like the rest of this has looked?
I mean, I'll just be happy to win a playoff game because that drought's been that bad. So we'll cross that bridge and see exactly what it looks like. But I mean, to win a playoff game, I think, you know, that's some sign of progress there.
Jordan writes in from Central PA. What's up, Dave and Alex? Tough loss. I watched the game yesterday with my brother, who's an Eagles fan. He says to me, at what point does it become disrespectful to your locker room to not make a change at quarterback? Those guys like TJ and Cam, who are giving you their prime years, knowing they have to play at a top five level just to have a chance with this offense. What are your thoughts? Also, do you agree that you have to at least change the quarterback room up behind Kenny via draft free agency if you're going to keep him as a starter in 2024. We've already addressed a lot of that. I mean, I don't want to rehash everything, but I mean, I wanted to let Jordan voice his voice there. So, I mean, we've already addressed, you know, not directly answers that, but we've talked a lot about that this podcast, right?
Yeah, I just think maybe there's a frustration there because at some point Tomlin, you know, he's yet to say, you know, Pickett's got to be better. I mean, he did say, you know, we need to see more. That was kind of the closest he's gotten to a critique of Kenny Pickett. And I think it's a frustration of like, you know, it's everybody but Kenny, and that can't be the case. Now, maybe internally it's different, and I'm sure there's a different conversation inside that locker room, but that's my outsider view.
At the very least, would you go ahead? I mean, another thing not going to happen, but go ahead and fire Matt Canada. Let Mike Sullivan have his run at it just so you can go down that road.
Midseason, you're saying?
Yeah, right now.
I mean, at this point, you are pretty far deep in the year. I'm not opposed to it. I do think Canada has been better over the last month. I think it's been more Pickett than Canada. I think this game was probably likely more evenly split between both guys. They're going to have to see the all 22 on that. So I can't say that definitively. But if they did that, it's not going to break my heart.
Right. But it would at least get you past the Sullivan hurdle.
The Sullivan hurdle?
Yeah.
What do you mean by the Sullivan
hurdle? By making a change and let him take over for the rest of the season and things not getting better. That way you say, well, we tried it with him. You know, that way you unequivocally can go outside the organization.
Yeah. Well, I think regardless, they probably should at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, I agree.
Yeah. I don't think it would hurt. And again, I know that there's only so much you can change in season. You're not changing your whole playbook, but I do think there's a game plan approach and game flow kind of thing that can be addressed that will have some improvement. You see that with Buffalo. You see that with the Raiders. You're seeing some spark and some change whenever those teams are making in season coaching changes.
I mean, a lot of these are looking like the same emails here. Luis Diaz writes in from Mexico City. All right, Luis, hello from Mexico City. Two questions. The last Browns possession was like I was expecting to be the last two of the Steelers, not complicated throws, simple readings and quick slants. Is Pickett that bad that can't hit those or slants are simply not called at all? Look, we've been talking about in breaking routes forever and a day there. Why they're not using more of those kind of things and getting the wide receivers yesterday, Alex, not that they had a lot of catches or yards, 11 yards after the catch.
It's more than what I would have guessed, to be honest with you, on a day where you throw for 106. I would have guessed it would have been worse.
Number two, how is it possible that the Steelers are so bad on screens? Most of them, if they work, is flagged on the O-line. The only ones that work are when Warren breaks five tackles. Yeah, timing interrupted a few of these, pressure interrupt a few of these situations. It's horrible to watch them try to run these screens. One last one from Sim Football Critic. What's up, guys? Stating the obvious here, but I need to get in an opinion from guys I respect. Kenny is not playing well. No way around that. But how much of it is direction from Matt Canada? Look, we've made sure that that we don't just put it all on one. But you know, we've got 20 something games with Kenny. He says, my biggest issue with Canada is his situational play calling and route concepts. It appears that Kenny is locking in on one target way too often. My question is that coming from Canada, there are definitely times when Kenny isn't seeing the field, but it sure feels like the design of the play is telling Kenny to predetermine his read. Look, it's everything, but Kenny's missing the layups too.
He has. And yeah, I mean, every offense has a primary read based on either the play call and or what the coverage is showing you. So there's always something to look at first. There's a structure and there's a, you know, kind of 1-2-3 aspect to the quarterback play. Again, it's both. Maybe the conclusion really is just that neither is NFL material. Maybe right. That's just the takeaway to have in one sweet and short sentence.
Right. One last one from Hank Moose. Hey, guys, this one's entitled Bubby Pickett.
Ooh, deep cut.
He says it is easy to point to incompletions when a quarterback is struggling, but how about some bad about how bad some of the passes are that Kenny completed. Took a great catch by Pickett to bail him out on one. Really hard to see anything positive from this guy. Yeah, we talked about that one to Pickett or to Pickens early in the show there. Even his completions really aren't looking all that fantastic right now.
No, yeah. Burster, again, he literally is now tied with Burster as the only two quarterbacks in Steelers history to go six straight games, minimum 15 pass attempts in a single season without a pick. But not that Burster was remembered fondly in Steelers history. So I call it a Kent Graham-like moment yesterday for Kenny Pickett. So we're at a bad stage right now, if you couldn't tell.
All right. We appreciate all the emails. There's so many in here, and a lot of them say the same things right now. So we got to get to the all 22 that just dropped and obviously start working towards the Steelers playing the Cincinnati Bengals this next weekend. What kind of feels like a gotta have it kind of game there. So we will dissect through the all 22, go through that several times. Obviously Mike Tomlin will talk to the media on Tuesday. We'd like to wish everybody, well, let's see, we'll be back before Thursday. So we'll hold off on the thing.
And a live stream tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern time. So if you didn't get a question answered then, you can ask Dave and I tonight.
Yeah. Show up at the live stream and tonight. Let's have a good turnout there and talk a little. We'll answer probably a lot of the same questions, but maybe if you have a different kind of one to throw out there, maybe we can get to that tonight as well at 7 Eastern time. So let's see. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Cazaro. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button. And then also if you like an ad-free version of the site, find the ad-free button there. So until Wednesday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.